My name is Alan Mislav. This will also be a choose your own adventure talk, but the point is I get to make all the choices, so hopefully you like them. This is a work I'm going to talk about today is joint with my colleague Ansley Post, who was at MPI SWS in Rice when we did the work. He's currently at Google, as well as my master's student Vijit Shah, who has gone off and got a real job, and so unfortunately he couldn't be here today. So what I'm going to be talking about today are online marketplaces, and you're probably familiar with many of these. These are sites like eBay, Amazon Marketplace, UBid, Overstock Auctions, and so forth. Now, these are among the most successful websites on the internet. For example, eBay alone sold or transacted $60 billion in goods in 2009 alone. Right? And just to be clear, what I mean by an online marketplace, what I distinguish it from a general e-commerce site, is that on an online marketplace, any user can serve as a buyer or a seller. As a result, these sites allow individual buyers and sellers to connect regardless of their location on the globe. And what they've done is they've enabled even the most esoteric of products to find a market. You can find buyers even if there's only two or three people in the world who are interested in this. And as a result, you can really view these sites as democratizing commerce. They've made it so that any user can participate as a buyer or as a seller. But when I mentioned eBay and these other sites, one of the things you might have thought about is fraud. If you've participated on eBay, you possibly have been defrauded. And in particular, they're known to suffer from significant amounts of fraud. So what I want to do is describe how the reputations and identities are managed, and then we'll talk about how fraud generally takes place on these sites. So in order to mitigate fraud to a certain extent, these sites use reputations. What I mean by that is, on the sites, each user has what's called a feedback profile. This is built up from transactions that the user has participated in with other users. For example, the red user on the slide has a lot of positive feedback, and these are from other users who give a thumbs up saying this user was honest. Whereas the blue user on the bottom has some negative feedback, which is shown by the thumbs down, meaning other buyers may stay away. Now, it's been shown that these reputations actually matter. Economists have studied sites like eBay, and they've observed that individual buyers will pay higher prices to buy items from users who have higher feedback scores, meaning they're more likely not to be fraudulent. But there's a complicating detail, and the problem is not completely solved. On these sites, accounts are generally free to create, meaning you only really have to have an email address or possibly solve a CAPTCHA. And as a result, that opens the door to significant reputation manipulation. So this is sort of introducing the fraud that I talked about a minute ago. And so what I'll do is describe some of the different ways that reputations can be manipulated on these sites because accounts are free. So the easiest thing you could do is if you're a fraudulent user and you've gained a negative reputation, you can simply throw it away and create another one. This is known as whitewashing, right? Second, if you have a friend who's also malicious and you two want to collude, you could list an item that's a fake item, have your other user buy it, and then you provide positive feedback on each other. So you can thereby inflate both of your reputations. And finally, if you're even smarter, you could conduct a Sybil attack by creating a large number of fake accounts on these sites. For example, the red user here could create a large number of accounts, list fake items with one account, buy the fake items with another account, and of course provide himself good feedback. And as a result, all of his reputations get inflated, right? And the problem is that other buyers in the network don't know that these are fake accounts owned by the same underlying user. And we've actually observed this in practice. Many of you are connected to the internet right now, so if you search on eBay for positive feedback guaranteed, what you'll see is there are a lot of auctions that offer a token item, for example, a digital photo, that's the ostensible point of the auction, but actually it's just to get positive feedback, and usually it costs about 50 cents. Now, this isn't just an attack in theory. This has been observed to lead to significant monetary losses in practice. For example, just a few months ago, there was a user in Miami who was arrested, and he stole over $700,000 from 5,000 different users doing exactly what I'm talking about here. He had over 250 accounts on eBay. So this is real fraud and real problems. Now, because of that, there are a lot of other approaches that have been looked at to try to mitigate this fraud. And each of the sites that I've mentioned so far generally has their own sort of spin on it. But you can boil it down to just a few set of techniques. And I want to talk about those now before I talk about how bizarre it works. The first of these is that sites can look at joining the market difficult, right? So in other words, instead of letting accounts be free, you have to show a passport or some sort of financial documents that are hard to forge. But there's a problem here, which is that this limits the applicability, meaning it makes it harder for users to either buy or sell, and thus the marketplace is no longer as effective. So in particular, in Bazaar, we're going to try to keep the same model of today. Second, sites like eBay can either require or for a fee offer escrow services. What I mean by that, it's a service where when a buyer buys an item, instead of providing the payment directly to the seller, he instead gives it to a third-party escrow service who holds the money until the buyer says he's happy. Now, the problem is that these escrow services cost money to manage and run, and as a result, they charge fixed fees and sometimes a fraction of the auction price. And so they're really only feasible for expensive items. That's the minority of items that exist on these marketplaces. Third, sites like Craigslist require in-person transactions, meaning the user, the buyer, and the seller have to meet in person, and the idea being that this reduces the ability to defraud people. But again, this significantly restricts the buyer and the seller population who can interact with each other and thus limits the marketplace artificially. And finally, sites like eBay can provide insurance, right? If you meet certain criteria and you claim you were defrauded and you follow the appropriate steps, then the site will refund your money. Now, this, you know, it makes sense, but it doesn't really solve the problem, because what it's doing is it's transferring the cost of fraud from one user to all users. In other words, the users themselves have to pay for this with their transaction fees. So what I'm going to present now is a system called Bazaar, which is a new approach to managing user reputations in online marketplaces. And unlike previous approaches, it actually provides a strong bound on the amount of fraud that users can conduct, regardless of the number of identities that they possess. Now, Bazaar also has the nice features that it works in conjunction with an existing marketplace of today. For example, it works with exactly the same feedback system that eBay has today. It doesn't impose any additional monetary cost on the users, and we don't make the assumption of strong identities, meaning users can have as many accounts as they want. Now, this is actually sometimes desired. For example, professional eBay sellers often run multiple stores, and sometimes they want to have separate identities for each of those shops. So the insight in Bazaar is that successful transactions between different users represent shared risk, meaning the buyer is risking that he's never going to get the item, the seller is risking the buyer is going to provide negative feedback. In particular, if that's rewarded, meaning I buy something from you and eventually we're both happy, I'm more likely to enter into a transaction with you in the future. Bazaar generalizes this notion, and that's how we build up our reputations. So what I want to do for the rest of the talk is first describe the design at a high level, which is actually fairly simple. And then I'll discuss some of the challenges we faced in terms of making our design work in practice. And then I'll present an evaluation of Bazaar on real-world data before I conclude. So I said a minute ago that Bazaar is based on this notion of shared risk, the fact that entering into a transaction, it takes risk for both parties. So the way Bazaar represents this is something called a risk network. And it's actually very simple. In this network, the identities are the nodes, meaning if you have an account on eBay, you'll have one node in this risk network. Now, the links represent successful transactions, meaning transactions where the buyer was satisfied. So if I buy something from you from $10, and eventually I provide positive feedback, then you and I have a $10 link. Multiple transactions are simply additive, so the link goes up. What you'll note is from what I've described, the risk network can be automatically generated from the feedback that exists today. In particular, the users themselves don't even need to know it exists. It can be just simply run in the background by eBay, because we're assuming the same feedback from the user. So what we assume is that the site operator, eBay or Amazon Marketplace, runs and maintains the risk network. So what I'm going to tell you next is how we calculate reputations using the risk network. But before I do that, I want to sort of tell you the model, which is that there's a computation that's run over the risk network. And so when a transaction is about to be completed, meaning I'm about to buy something from a seller, the site operator will query Bazaar and ask, is this transaction that's about to go through potentially fraudulent? And Bazaar comes back and either says, yes, I think it's potentially fraudulent, or no, I do not. So now what I want to tell you is how that calculation works. So what I've shown on the slide is an example risk network, and I've simplified it just, you know, to make it clear. And so let's suppose we have our yellow buyer here, and he's buying an item from our seller. What we do in Bazaar is we calculate the max flow in the risk network between the buyer and the seller. We then compare that max flow value to the value of the potential transaction. And we ask, in particular, is the max flow higher or lower? If the max flow value is lower than the amount of the transaction, we declare it as potentially fraudulent. So you're probably wondering, well, why does this make sense? How does this prevent fraud? So let me show you. So let's take this example here. The max flow from the buyer to the seller is $5, right? So any auction that is more than $5 will be declared as potentially fraudulent. But let's suppose we have our seller here is malicious, and he wants to manipulate his reputation. So what would he do? Well, he does the same thing as before. He creates a bunch of fake accounts, lists fake items, buys them with his other account, and then gets links. So it looks something like this. What you'll note is that this doesn't actually increase his max flow to any of the valid users. And Bazaar doesn't even know who's honest and who's fake. In other words, which transactions are fake or honest. But still, just from the max flow calculation, you can see this doesn't increase his reputation. Similarly, the seller can create a whole fake network over here on the left. Millions of accounts, links however he wants, still doesn't affect the max flow. So this is the basic intuition behind Bazaar, is that it provides a strengthened form of reputation regardless of the number of accounts the users possess. Now, there are changes that are made to the risk network once Bazaar receives feedback about whether the auction was fraudulent or successful. In particular, we want to prevent sellers who participate in malicious auctions from defrauding other users. So what I want to tell you now is how Bazaar responds to the feedback that it receives from the buyer. So what I've shown here is an even more simple risk network, which is just the three. And again, let's imagine that the yellow user is the buyer, the red user is the seller, and the transaction amount is $4. So again, the max flow is $5. Bazaar lets the auction go through. If Bazaar receives positive feedback, then a new link is created from the buyer to the seller, weighted by $4. And again, this is simply the definition of the risk network. Transactions that are successful lead to a link. If Bazaar receives neutral feedback, then what that means is that the buyer didn't feel defrauded, but he wasn't any more likely to enter into a transaction with that user in the future. So what Bazaar does is it simply leaves the risk network alone. There are no changes. Finally, if Bazaar receives negative feedback, meaning the buyer felt defrauded, it removes $4 worth of flow from some set of paths in the network. In this example, there's just one path, so it removes $4 from that path. The effect of this is that the seller is punished. I mean, the seller now has lower max flow to other users in the network and can defraud fewer users. So what this leads to is strong bound on the amount of fraud that users can conduct. So let's take an example of one user, say our red user. So the question is, how much fraud can this one user conduct before all of his auctions will be declared as potentially fraudulent? Well, I'll give you an upper bound, which is simply the sum of all of his links, or the sum of all the transactions he's participated in the past that were successful. The reason for that is that each time he defrauds another user, he loses links with the value of that auction. As a result, eventually he runs out of all of his links and thus can defraud no other users because he has no max flow. What's nice about the analysis I just presented is that it holds for any cut in the network, right? So let's suppose we have the network here and I place a cut, right? What you'll note is that the users on the left can only defraud the users on the right for the amount of the sum of the cut. So what this says is that let's suppose we could place the cut between all of the malicious users and all of the good users. Then you'll note two things. The first is all of the links that lie along the cut are instances where the malicious users were good, meaning they provided good service, because that's the definition of a link, meaning the buyer was eventually satisfied. And second, this bound holds regardless of the number of identities that exist on either side of the cut. So no matter how the malicious users manipulate their structure of their network, it's only the structure of the cut that matters. The upshot is that collusion between malicious users doesn't help. In other words, if I'm malicious and you're malicious, together we can only steal the same amount that we could steal separately, again, regardless of the number of identities. And thus, Sybil attacks doesn't help either. So that's the simple design of Bazaar, but there's a couple of tricks you have to play to make it work in practice. So what I want to do is talk about some of the challenges we faced in the design and talk about how we address them. And these are many things that you probably have thought about already. So in particular, I'm going to talk about three different challenges. The first is the delay of feedback. So if you purchase something on eBay, the basic model is you complete the auction, you pay money, and then at some point in a couple weeks later, you receive an item in the mail. Now, hopefully you receive an item in the mail. If not, you declare it to be fraudulent. And so there's a delay between when the auction, when the transaction's completed and when the buyer realizes whether or not it was successful. So if you're not careful, this will open up a window of vulnerability. So let's take an example. So suppose the seller could conduct mini auctions and never ship the item. So he could defraud many users of $5 before any of them has realized that he's been defrauded. So how do we address this? Well, in Bazaar, what we do is when an auction goes through, if we allow it, and for example, let's say the transaction amount is $4, we temporarily remove the flow from the network. We put it on hold, right? And what that does has the effect of preventing the seller from using that in the future until we know the outcome of the previous auction. And so if we receive positive feedback from the buyer at the end, we restore the flow. We simply put it back in the network. If we receive neutral feedback, we do exactly the same thing. But if we receive negative feedback, we simply make that flow removal permanent. The net effect is that this prevents the seller from using the window of opportunity to defraud many users before any of them has realized that they've been defrauded. The second challenge that we faced is bootstrapping. One thing you've probably thought about is that new users to the network don't have any links by definition. So thus they have no max flow, and thus all their auctions will be declared as fraudulent. And so in Bazaar, there are actually two options you can use in order to bootstrap new users into the risk network. The first is you can use the social network. So here's the intuition. We note before that the malicious users can essentially create fake links. In other words, they're allowed, you know, by listing fake auctions, they can create links between themselves. So we allow the good users to do that as well. So in other words, if I come to you and it's like, hey, I'd like to join, you know, eBay, for example, then you say, oh, it's Alan, I'll vouch you for $15. Now, this doesn't open a new avenue for attack, because when you do this, you're putting your links on the line. So in other words, if I am evil and I steal $15, the link between me and you is punished, but also your links to other people are punished as well. And so you really have to choose your friends carefully. But second, even if you're a loner and you don't have any friends in eBay, there's another option where you can use an escrow service. So suppose you take your $15 and you give it to eBay to hold in escrow. As a response, eBay creates you $15 worth of links, say 15 $1 links or 3 $5 links to random users, right? Now what we've done is we've brought you into the network. You have links, you can participate. But it turns out this doesn't actually cost you money, because later on, once you've gotten some more links, you can ask eBay for your escrow money back. And it'll do that if you haven't lost these links that it's created for you, right? If you have, then it doesn't refuse to give your money back. Right? The intuition is that if you do defraud, you've lost the money, so there's no incentive for you to do this. It doesn't open a new avenue to defraud. Now, the third and final challenge I'm going to talk about is scaling the max flow computation. So I just said that in Bazaar, we compare the transaction amount to the max flow between the buyer and the seller. Now, if any of you have dealt with calculating max flow, you know it's pretty expensive, especially over large, dense graphs. And there are lots of standard approaches, largely from the theory literature, about how to speed max flow up. But most of these are not quite applicable to our situation in Bazaar. For example, Gomery Hue trees require a lot of pre-computation to form a very efficient max flow calculation in runtime. But it assumes the network isn't changing, and that isn't the case in Bazaar. Our network's constantly changing where links are coming and going. But luckily in Bazaar, we can actually leverage two separate observations. The first observation is that on the risk networks we've studied, they tend to have what I call a dense core. And the basic intuition is that if I look at the subgraph consisting of highly weighted links, that subgraph tends to be connected, meaning the network doesn't shatter, right? The second observation that we leverage is that in Bazaar, we don't actually need the entire max flow value. I don't need to know what the max flow between a buyer and the seller is. What I do need to know is it higher than a given amount, which is the amount of the potential transaction? So what I'll show you now is how we leverage both of these observations in practice to speed up our max flow calculation. Now, to do that, we use a representation of the graph called what I call a multigraph. And so what I first want to do is tell you what a multigraph looks like, and then I'll tell you how we use it in practice. So here's an example risk network. Right? And I'm using some very simple link weights that will become obvious why I'm doing that in a minute. Right? So for simplicity, what I'm going to do is that instead of saying the numbers, which are sort of hard to read, I'm going to replace it with the thickness of the arrows. Right? So thicker arrows mean higher weighted links. Okay? So now we've got our risk network. Now what we do is we convert this into a multigraph. And we do that by first copying the risk network and declaring that to be the lowest level of our multigraph. And then what we do is we take a subset of the links that have at least, say, weight of 2 to the first, or 2, and form that as our level 1 graph. We then take the subset of that graph where links are weighted at least 2 squared to be level 2 graph, and so forth. And as a result, you get a log of n levels where n is the highest weighted link in your network. So this is simply our multigraph. Now you're probably wondering, well, how does this actually speed things up in practice? I want to tell you how that is now. So the way that we calculate max flow using a multigraph is we start at the top level, and we look between the buyer and the seller and ask, does sufficient flow exist? If we find it there, then we're done, because the top level graph is by definition a subset of the bottom level graph, right? And so you can end early. If you don't find sufficient flow at the top level, you simply go down to the next level and so forth, and you keep doing this. And so if you don't find sufficient flow in all of the levels, then you declare sufficient flow doesn't exist, and this is the same as in the normal risk network, because the lowest level is by definition the entire risk network. So this sounds like an expensive computation, but it turns out to work out pretty well in practice. The reason is that first, the higher levels in the risk network have much heavier links. All the highly weighted links are up there. And so it's actually much quicker to find max flow. And second, the higher level graphs tend to be much, much smaller. And they are connected by our observation from before. So I'll show you some numbers in the evaluation that show that this does, in fact, speed up max flow calculation in Bazaar. So what I want to do now is present an evaluation before I conclude. So our goal here is to understand, does Bazaar actually work in practice? And we're going to look at three questions. The first is, does it prevent fraud? In other words, does it work? Second, how much does it cost in terms of CPU time? And then third, how often does it incorrectly flag honest transactions? So we implemented Bazaar in C, and we used the multigraph representation I talked about a second ago. And all of our simulations were run on my desktop, which is a single processor machine. But to simulate Bazaar, we wanted to use real-world data. And to do so, we crawled eBay and focused on the ebay.co.uk site. In particular, we focused on 5 of the largest categories and crawled all of the auctions that existed. Now, if you're familiar with eBay, it unfortunately only gives you a 90-day history of detailed feedback, so our data only covers 90 days. It's not an entire history. But we do have over 8 million auctions. So to simulate Bazaar, what we do is we look at each of these categories separately, and we look at how Bazaar would perform if it was run over that category for these 90 days. So now let's look at those questions. The first was, does Bazaar work? Does it actually prevent fraud? And the way we evaluate this is, first, we need a risk network to simulate Bazaar on top of. So we take 80% of our data and use that to form a risk network randomly. We use the remaining 20% to simulate Bazaar. Now, in order to simulate, we want to see, does it actually bound malicious users? So what we do, similar to prior work, is we flag 1% of the users randomly as being malicious, and we simulate in our trace. They try to steal as much as they can. And so what I've shown on the graph is, along the x-axis, for each of those malicious users, the sum of their links. Along the y-axis, I've shown in our simulation how much could they steal before all their transactions were blocked. And what you'll note is that in all cases, it's below the x equal y line, meaning the bound holds. If you're curious about why it's sometimes much lower, it's due to the fact that sometimes you'll have links to just one other user, and it doesn't increase your max flow to anybody else. And so as a result, the x equal y is simply an upper bound. The second question we had is, well, how expensive is Bazaar to calculate in terms of CPU time, because max flow is known to be expensive? So what I've shown on this slide is, in the trace before, how long on average it took to calculate one max flow calculation for each of the 5 categories. And what you'll note is, first, with the multigraph representation, it takes between 1 and 6 seconds, but also it provides a substantial speed up of between 2 and 3 times in practice. Finally, the third thing we want to look at is, what is the impact on good users? Meaning, what fraction of the time does Bazaar incorrectly calculate an honest transaction as fraudulent? So we looked back at our trace, and we looked at what fraction of the time were auctions that eventually resulted in positive feedback flagged by Bazaar as potentially fraudulent. And we turned out that it's between 1 and 5%. So that means is that most honest users are rarely affected. And if you're interested in, I have some reasons why this is the case, because we're only looking at a 90-day history, so we don't have the entire history of Bazaar. And I think in practice, this would be even lower. So with that, I'm going to conclude and start from the very beginning, which is that online marketplaces are now known to be a very successful sort of subset of the internet websites. But they're known to have significant fraud. And I've argued in this talk that a lot of this fraud is due to the free nature of accounts, because it doesn't really cost anything to create an additional identity. So in this talk, I've presented a Bazaar, which is a new approach to strengthening reputations in these online marketplaces. It leverages a risk network that already exists, and as a result, it's deployable today. And in fact, we calculated that if Bazaar were deployed by eBay during our trace of data, Bazaar would have prevented about 164,000 pounds worth of fraud, meaning 164,000 pounds worth of auctions that eventually resulted in negative feedback. So I'm going to stop there, and I'd be happy to take any questions.
So while bootstrapping a new user, you would have to farm links from a new user to some of the other existing users in the network. Mm-hmm. So how do you decide which users to link to and how much money to put on each link?
The first option was via the social network, meaning you query your friends.
No.
The second option?
I have a different question. So suppose you want to give $15 credit. Mm-hmm. Then you create a new node, and you put weights from that node to some of the other nodes in the network. So which nodes do you create the link to, or how do you put the weights? I mean, how do you divide the weights among multiple links?
So we haven't explored the options for that, but in practice, I would imagine that you'd want to create, if you put $15, you do 15 $1 links. The reason is that if you do cause fraud to happen, you don't want to impact any one of those users too much. But the bounds still hold regardless. It's just a question of whether you want to spread the fraud from one user to many. Does that make sense? So basically, our idea is you choose randomly. You just pick random users and then decide with some policy how you allocate that amount of money.
And so, I mean, whichever way you split those, if it's a $15 credit, you can split it in any way among any users in the network?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. It's not obvious to me how it's. I can talk to you offline about.
Okay. As long as the graph is connected, then you should have flow to anybody, if that makes sense. But we'll talk about it offline.
Hi, Sitan, Princeton University. I just had a question. I may be misunderstanding something, but it seems like my ability to sell stuff depends on the links I make, right? My ability to sell to distant people down the graph depends on being able to route a flow through a path to that graph. So that depends on other people's reputations as well. I mean, suppose I come in and I want to sell something that, worth $100, but my escrow service only gives me a $15 link, and even if it gives me a $100 link, I depend on people down the path to maintain high-value links so I can actually push my transaction through. And they may not have an incentive to maintain more than, let's say, a $5 link. So how does this address that?
Yeah, so essentially what you're asking about is, what is the structure of the risk network? In other words, if it's a very, very sparse graph where there's like communities or so forth, then yes, this may actually occur. There might not be sufficient flow. Now, I'll first say that in practice, in the eBay graphs we've seen, this doesn't tend to be the case. They're very, very dense. They're very well connected. There's a dense core. And so almost all paths are short, and they go through the core, right? So first, in practice, this doesn't really seem to be a problem. But if the problem is local, meaning you don't have $100 worth of links, you could use the escrow service for $100. Or you could ask your friends to sort of give you these virtual links for $100.
Right, but for distant people, I kind of depend on the density is what you're saying.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, and so, yeah, there are certain graphs where this wouldn't work. But of the graphs we've studied, that doesn't seem to be the case.
Okay, thank you.
So Frank Ueda from UC San Diego. Mm-hmm. So I like this. This seems really cool. It seems, though, that if you limit people's ability to create free accounts to create fraud, this really drives up the incentives for people to steal valid users' account credentials via different means and then use their reputations to create fraud. So can you comment at all about how that would would change things after you have these people who have established good reputations who then are either hacked or then turned into bad apples.
Exactly. So Bazaar doesn't do anything particular to help compromise the accounts. But I would argue that in Bazaar, the situation is a little better. The reason is today, suppose you're an eBay seller and I steal your identity, then I could potentially steal an unbounded amount of money, right? But with Bazaar, you can only steal a bounded amount, which is the amount of money that the sum of your links. So while we don't directly address that, I would argue the situation is a little bit better with Bazaar.
Thank you.